We're talking about conversations with God, a study on prayer. And we're going to look at the 60th Psalm tonight. If you've got a Bible, and I hope you do, turn to it, put your ribbon in it, and then go back to 2 Samuel 8. And we'll catch up with this in just a minute. But if you recall, last week we talked about these conversations we're having with God, because if you're going to have a relationship with anyone, whether it be a relationship here amongst us on earth or a relationship with God, it's impossible to have that without talking to that person. And so that's our premise as we go through this in this particular semester or quarter or however we want to refer to it with these conversations with God. In order to talk about the 60th Psalm, as I was putting the lesson together, it became pretty apparent we need to talk about David, and we need to talk about context and the circumstances of the 60th chapter. So as we look at this, this is where the 2 Samuel chapter 8 is going to come in, because we're going to go back there and we're going to talk about David himself first in order to get the context for the 60th Psalm. If I said to you, tell me something about David, what would you say? I knew that was coming next, right? David was described as a man after God's own heart. Do you know where he was described that way? Do you remember what the circumstance was? If you'll look in 1 Samuel chapter 13, you'll see that Samuel first said those words. What were the circumstances? Who preceded David as king? Was Saul a good king, a bad king? What was he? He started out okay and got worse, right? What were the circumstances in 1 Samuel 13 when Samuel said these words to David? Do you remember that? Saul had decided, and this is fairly early in his reign as king, but Saul had decided to go out and fight the Philistines. And what he had accomplished was just kind of poking the bear, poke the hornet's nest. And then one day Israel kind of wakes up and looks, and there is a hugely superior force, both in number and fighting skill, than what they're able to go up against. And they got pretty distressed over it. There's a story, and I can't remember, I think it starts in chapter 10, 11, 12. We get around 1 Samuel 13. As to why, or after Saul had gone and irritated the Philistines, he needed to do a sacrifice to God. And he asked Samuel about that, and Samuel was supposed to come to him. Saul waited 7 days, and Samuel had not come to him. So what did Saul do? You remember? Why was that a problem? Why was Saul doing a sacrifice a problem? Yeah, everybody's mumbling the same thing. Yeah, he was a Benjamite. He wasn't a Levite. He needed Samuel in order to do that sacrifice. So he does it himself. What happens as soon as he does it? This always works this way, right? As soon as he does a sacrifice, Samuel comes walking around the corner. If you look at that scripture and you see that story, it's almost as if though Saul goes, uh-oh, I'm busted. Because he goes and he says, he goes out to greet Samuel, and Samuel is not having any of it. He says, talk to the hand, I'm tired of you. What does Samuel tell Saul? Your kingdom will be taken away from you because God has found someone after his own heart. Now, how old is David at that point? He's a young guy, right? God saw in David's heart that which would make him a good king. What is the difference between Saul And David. Did Saul make some mistakes in his life? Did David make some mistakes in his life? What's the difference between the two? Wait a minute. Don't everybody mumble at the same time. Did you just say something, Kathy? Eva, hang on a second. He was what, Kathy? David repented. What the difference between the two of them is David's heart. He made a mistake, and then he got on his knees and he begged to God to take care of that. Do you remember how Saul was described, by the way, in 1 Samuel chapter 9? He was described as the most handsome man in all of Israel. He looked the part of the king. There's a lesson here that I don't want us to forget. Looking the part of it does not a king make.
Didn't God tell Samuel they're going to get what they asked for?
Pardon?
Samuel was told they're going to get what they asked for.
Talk to the Israelites. Yeah, the Israelites said, "We want a king." He says, careful, paraphrase, "You'll get what you asked for." And they did in this particular circumstance. Saul started out as a man with humility. As a matter of fact, when he was anointed, they couldn't find him. He was hiding amongst the equipment. Had to kind of drag him out there in order to be king. But things changed kind of quickly, I guess. David never lost sight of who God was, and that's what's important. Now, you've told me that David was a man after God's own heart. I also want you to give me one word descriptions of who David was. One word. Don't everybody mumble at the same time, okay?
A warrior.
A shepherd.
Musician.
Pardon? A musician.
Honest.
Say again.
Honest.
Did I say positive? Because there's a couple of words I don't want you to say right now. I don't think I did I? One word, positive descriptions of David. My bad. Faithful? Yep. There's more. Keep going with me.
Trusting?
Victor? Godly? Tina? Prayerful. Keep going.
Forgiving.
Brave.
Fair.
What?
Fair.
Fair.
Humble.
Humility. David was a humble man.
Righteous.
There are the ones that I came up with. Debbie and I did this in the car one afternoon going somewhere. I don't remember exactly where, but I wanted something to part of the class. It wasn't just words that I was thinking of. And I said, "Debbie, give me all these words." Well, she reeled off this list of whatever. There's one word up there that I don't think that you gave me, and I'm not sure that you'll understand why it's there exactly yet. Do you see it? No, he was a poet. He wrote Psalms.
Desperate.
Why did I put the word desperate in this list? David wrote some psalms of lament. The 60th psalm is one of those psalms. We're going to get to more about that in just a second with some more history of David, why he wrote that particular 60th psalm. But if I put up the next two words, and you kind of knew that was coming, right? Because there are 20 things up there on the board that are positive. And then we're talking about the same man who was an adulterer and a murderer. These things, do they jive? Do they mix? How can this man be a man after God's own heart when those bottom two words are there? Well, what about David's heart. You know the story, right? We all know it. Israel is in battle. Bathsheba's husband Uriah is on the front lines fighting the battle. David goes up on the roof one evening, looks down on the next roof, sees Bathsheba taking a bath. Problem? Yeah, apparently it was, because we know what David did, right? Well, what happened next? Imagine that. David committed adultery. She got pregnant. What was David's response to that? Yes, he did. How'd he go about doing it? The cover-up is what? Always worse than the event that it's trying to cover up. Right? We ought to learn that lesson. How did he try to cover it up? Pardon? Yep. Say again. Yes. He sent word to the front. He said, "Send me Uriah." He brought him back. He asked Uriah how things were going at the battlefront. And he said, "Uriah, you've," and this is paraphrased, obviously, "you've done a good job. I want you to go home, have a rest." What was he trying to do? Get Uriah into the house, let him go to sleep with his wife, cover up the fact that she was pregnant with his child. See, this is not just adultery and murder. This is, it's deep when he goes here. What did Uriah do? He walked outside and he laid down in the king's doorstep and slept on the ground because he couldn't go home. Because his friends, his fellow soldiers, they were in the battlefield, they were in the trenches, they were on the front lines, and he could not go home and participate in the niceties of having a warm bed and being with his wife and having good food to eat and all that kind of stuff, knowing that his friends were in the battle. David called him back in the next day when he found out about it, got him drunk the next day, tried to send him home. He still didn't go home. David wrote a letter to Joab. He said, "Put him on the front. Withdraw from him. Let the chips fall." This is the man that we've got the 20 positive things about up here, who was called a man after God's own heart. Remember that penitent part? Yeah. All right, let's go back to 2 Samuel chapter 8. No, let's not. Hang on a second. Let's stay where we are. I almost left the part about Nathan out. Nathan the prophet goes to see David. What is he telling a story about? Remember? A rich man and a poor man. The poor man had a lamb, and it was the only thing he had. The lamb ate with him. As a matter of fact, Scripture says this, the man treated the lamb like his daughter. Some of us have pets that we think are part of our family, don't we? See, people were doing it long before we ever thought about it. What did the rich man have? All kinds of flocks. The rich man had a guest who was coming in to visit. He had to fix a guest a meal. Where'd he go get the lamb from? From the poor man. Can you imagine? How could you be that just greed-driven, I guess? I don't know. David was doing some bad stuff too, wasn't he? So the rich man goes and gets it. Nathan tells him this story. And David explodes and says, "Surely this man should die." Now this is the part that's kind of in my Bible because I wrote it to the side, not because God put it there. But I see Nathan standing in front of David and getting about that far away from his face and then kind of poking him in the chest, and he said, "You are that man." What did David do? He repented. He said, "I have done bad." Nathan says, "Well, you have. And there are going to be consequences to this," and we know what those consequences were. That child died. What did David do while that child got sick?
Prayed,
laid on the ground. What do you think David said in that prayer when he was trying to talk to God and say, "Please change your mind, God, and let this child live"? Do you think, and some of you, perhaps some of you in this class tonight have prayed that prayer because you've had a child that was that sick and that you thought was near death, and you've gone to God in prayer. What did you pray? Do you think that maybe David might have said, "Swap out, God. Take me instead of that baby, that child"? We don't know what David said. But again, if this man is after God's own heart, you know that he loved that child, even though he had done wrong. All right, the comment is, if you couldn't hear it, how would that story have been different if Nathan hadn't approached David? And there's a lesson there for us. When we know that sin is in front of us, do we just ignore it or do we address it? Nathan addressed it. And because of that, David repented. He went in, he laid on the ground, he pleaded for the child's life. God said, "No, this is what's going to happen." The child died. When he got through, when the child died, and those that were assisting David were trying to get him to get up off the ground and trying to get him to take food and trying to lift him up, and he said, "No," until that child died. And once the child died, he did what? He got up, cleaned himself up, and the first thing he did was he went and worshiped. A man after God's own heart. Are you starting to see that heart come through? He's done some bad things. But the word that was used, and I think it was Kathy or Tina that used the word penitent. Do you see that with David? Was there a hand? No? All right, sorry. Go back to 2 Samuel chapter 8. In 2 Samuel chapter 8, David's army had been fighting. They had been winning. They had been doing those things that armies do. They had been expanding the territory. And in the first part of chapter 8, 2 Samuel chapter 8, David is on a high. He's done these good things. He's won these battles. He's expanded the territory, expanded the kingdom. We go to chapter 9, and he performs an act of kindness for Mephibosheth. Remember that? Mephibosheth was Jonathan's son. And David asked the question, "Who is left of Saul's house that I could do something kind for?" Mephibosheth was lame, couldn't walk, both feet. David brought him into his house, made a place for him. Didn't have to do that. As a matter of fact, those heathen kingdoms that were around Israel, around all the 12 tribes of Israel, typically when a new king came in, what happened to the old king's family? They weren't left. The new king didn't want anybody left that might take the kingdom away. David is just the opposite. He does a kind thing for Jonathan's son. We get to chapter 10. Remember the Ammonites? All right. The king of Ammon, apparently at some point in his life, had done a good thing for David. And the king passed away. David said, "I'm going to send emissaries to the funeral. I'm going to console the king's son, who is now the new king, and show kindness to him because his father showed kindness to me." How'd that work out, by the way? When they went up there, what did the king's servants, council, cabinet, however you want, whatever you want to look at. What did they think that the Israelites were there to do? Spy on them. David's going to come wipe us out. So what did they do to David's men? This is a great story in the Bible if you don't know this. They shaved off half their beard. Now, I don't know if it was bottom half or like left or right. I'm not sure about that part. When I was in college, I had a professor at 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock. And he came in at 8 o'clock and he had half of his face shaved. And apparently he was a guy that just did one half at a time. And literally the left half was clean and the right half was unshaven. Now, by the time we got to 10 o'clock, he had fixed that. But I have remembered that story forever. Those of you that went to Harding, come ask me. I'll tell you who it was later. But I remember that story forever because that's what I think about when I think about this. I think it would have been worse if they shaved off half of the Israelites' beards like on one side of their face. But that wasn't the only thing they did. What else did they do? They took their scissors or their knives or whatever and they cut out their garments so that their backsides were visible. So they had to start walking home with half a beard and their tush showing. Were they humiliated? Do you think just a little bit? What did David do? He sent an army up to the Ammonites and took care of the problem. The point in this is, in chapter 8, David was on a high. In chapter 9, David was on a high. In chapter 10, he came straight down. Now, the writing of Psalm 60 falls in somewhere between 2 Samuel chapter 8 and 2 Samuel chapter 10. There are some scholars who believe it goes that it was written in 2 Samuel chapter 8 between verses 12 through 14. Because part of chapter 8 was this high after David had sent his armies out and beat up all these other countries. But apparently there was a return battle. As a matter of fact, it may have been one that Israel lost. And so after having the euphoria of winning the battles, there was someone who came, another country that came back in, fought another one. David might have had to go back and fight one more battle in order just to kind of clean it up. And in chapter 10, obviously the high part of just being a good person and then having it backfire. Have you ever done something that you thought was right and have it turn out completely wrong? And you can't figure out why. That's why David in the 60th Psalm seems to be a little bit desperate. Turn to the 60th Psalm. Let's read the first five verses. O God, you have cast us off. You have broken us down. You have been displeased. Restore us again. You have made the earth tremble. You have broken it. Heal its breaches, for it is shaking. You have shown your people hard things. You have made us drink the wine of confusion. You have given a banner to those who fear you, that it may be displayed because of the truth, that your beloved may be delivered, save with your right hand, and hear me. Give me a word that describes David's tone in these first five verses, or more than one word. I don't care. How do you see David? What's his attitude in these first five verses? Don't everybody mumble at the same time. Sorrowful. He is sorrowful. You remember one of those words that I put up on that list that you kind of looked at and go, well, what's that word doing in there?
Desperate.
He's feeling dejected. Oh, there's another D word. Did you say dejected or rejected?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Dejected. right? Or the way we say it in the South, dejected. We've got these things, and David feels that way. Everything was going good, and now it's kind of going sour, and desperation creeps in. Is desperation a sin, by the way? It's okay to say no if you want to, because the answer is no. Can desperation lead to sin?
Depends on what you do with it.
Pardon?
Depends on what you do with the desperation.
Okay, it depends on what you do with the desperation. What is David doing? Where is David going? He is. The word that I use for the first five verses is raw. This is David. The real David. He talks about this. He looks at God and he says, "You have cast us off." You know what the word here, the cast off part is? It's a word for what's rancid. What can you think of that goes rancid? Pardon? Meat goes rancid. What?
Butter
goes rancid. What happens when that butter goes rancid? It stinks. Oh God, we stink in front of you. You have caused us to stink. Do we talk to God that way, by the way? Maybe that's a little bit too real when we're talking to God. You have cast us off. You have broken us down. How many have been in the military? Have you ever been broken down by a drill instructor so that you can do it the military way? Perhaps some of you have been broken down on the athletic field by a coach, or maybe some of you have been broken down in the classroom by a teacher who expected more out of you. Do we let God see the real part of us, by the way, when we're praying? Think about the things that have happened in David's life. Think about all those things that have gone on that we've talked about tonight, some of which at the point he wrote this had not happened. But what do you see in David's personality that makes him that man after God's own heart through these things that we're talking about here in this 60th Psalm? You have cast us off. You have broken us down. You are displeased with us. By the way, David was a man after God's own heart, and he did act in a penitent nature when Nathan presented to him the problem of him and Bathsheba. But if you'll look in chapter 11, verse 27, God made it very clear that he was not happy with David for taking this particular action. Because the last part of verse 27... I thought I had it right here in front of me. The last part of 37 says, "Nevertheless, God was displeased." So before we start thinking that, you know, we can kind of do what we want to do as long as we're penitent about it, God was displeased. We leave a legacy, do we not? That legacy is left by us by all the things that we do in the course of our life. David's legacy is he was a man after God's own heart. David's legacy is also that God was very displeased with how he took an action or this particular action. David is sorrowful, and he's writing so in this particular psalm, and the words that he's put into the psalm illustrate that. The book that I'm using in order to kind of supplement this, talks about lament. And this psalm is a psalm of lament. And it gave this difference or example of it. The first thing says, lament is not saying, "I don't understand what is happening, God. My faith is crumbling before my eyes." When we go to God in prayer, is that how we talk about our faith? This author says that lament is, "I trust you, God, with all my heart. I still don't understand what's happening, but I don't have to understand it because I trust you. There is a difference between these two statements. Do we see that difference and exactly how it comes about as we pray to God for the circumstances that upset us in our lives? It's also a truth that when we lament and we pour out our heart before God, it becomes apparent how small that our problems are compared to God's magnitude. And I think we really need to remember this part. You know, we're fond of telling ourselves our God is bigger than all of our problems. But sometimes we get to points in our life where we don't remember that too well, and we decide that we can take matters into our own hands and we can handle things. Will there be consequences when we mess up? There's going to be. But what's more important? The mess up or how we deal with the mess up? How did David deal with it? He was penitent. How big is our God? All right, let's go back to the psalm. I want to get back to the words that he used. We've talked a little bit about being cast off and being broken down. How is verse 3, I'm sorry, losing track. Verse 3, you have shown your people hard things. What are your, who else has, does anybody have NIV? What does it say, Steve?
Shown your people desperate times.
Shown your people desperate times. Does anybody have New American Standard?
Major people experience hardship.
Barton?
Major people experience hardship.
Hardship, hard things, desperation. Who took care of that? What's David saying? You have shown us desperate times. You have made us drink the wine of confusion. We are in a situation where we are reeling from it. The reference is to a drunk who's having trouble standing up, can't get his bearings. Some of those situations that we have in life give us that kind of result because they attack us and they move us and they cause us to stumble and they cause us not to have good decision-making abilities regarding all of this because we try to take it on ourselves. Say it again. What is your version?
ESV.
Tina talks about, whereas you have made us drink the wine of confusion, the ESV says you have made us drink the wine that makes us stagger. Life does that to us sometimes, doesn't it? It gets to us in such a way that we have problems and we try to deal with them and we can't deal with them. How is Satan described? By the way, did y'all hear that? What do we do to keep from getting devoured? Eva, you need to let somebody else answer the questions. Eva's got all the right answers. Now, I'm not fussing at Eva. She's got the right answers. But she's kind of like trying to be teacher's pet where she's trying to answer all the questions. Yeah. Steve?
Kind of like elsewhere in the Bible.
That's exactly right. Did you hear what... I hope you could hear what Stephen said. God or I'm sorry, Satan puts us in a position where we're looking inward, not upward. As a matter of fact, I've got, I think it's in John. Hang on a second. I lost track of something. John, no, 12. Turn to John 12, 40. I think that's what it is. Hold on. All right, this is John himself talking. And the circumstances are we're in that part of Jesus' life towards the end, last few days. That was one, right? Okay, thank you. John chapter 12, verse 40. No, let's go back up to 37. But although he had done so, this is John chapter 12, verse 37. But although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in him, that the word of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, which he spoke, "Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" Therefore they could not believe, because Isaiah said again, "He has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts." Who's Isaiah talking about? Satan. "He has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, lest they should see with their eyes, lest they should understand with their hearts, and turn so that I, God, should heal them." What does Satan do in our lives that creates that problem as he's walking about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour? It's what Steve was talking about. He causes us to look inward instead of upward. David was looking inward in a big part of this lesson tonight, wasn't he? He was thinking that he was king. He was Almighty King. He got humbled. What did he do when he got humbled? He went to God. He went to God in prayer. That's the context for Psalm 60. Look at verses 11 and 12 of the same psalm. This is how he ends it. "Give us help from trouble, for the help of man is useless, though through God we will do valiantly, for it is He who shall tread down our enemies." Is David saying that we should not be helping our brother and our sister when they are down and out because our help is useless? Is that what he's saying? We do need to be helping our brother and sister, but whom do we need to have with us while we're helping them?
Through God.
Through God we help them. That's right, Bonnie. Exactly right. Through God we help them. Turn to Psalm 24. The circumstances of Psalm chapter 60 were, as we talked about, somewhere in 2 Samuel chapter 8. And if a couple of places are accurate on the timing, then we're talking about somewhere around 1000 BC, give or take a year or two, I guess, plus or minus a year. Most of those scholars agree that Psalm 24 was written after Psalm 60. Psalm 60 was definitely a psalm of lament. Let's look at verse 24 to finish up. "The earth is the Lord's in all its fullness, the world and those who dwell therein. He has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the waters. Who may ascend into the hill of the Lord, or who may stand in His holy place? He who has clean hands and a pure heart, who has not lifted up his soul to an idol, nor sworn deceitfully. He shall receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from God of his salvation. This is Jacob, the generation of those who seek him, who seek your face. Lift up your heads, O you gates, and be lifted up, you everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord strong and mighty, the Lord mighty in battle. Lift up your heads, O ye gates. Lift up, you everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in. Who is this King of glory? The Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. After David writes that 60th psalm in desperation, he writes the 24th psalm. We say what a difference a day makes, right? What a difference a prayer makes. What will God do for us when we go to Him, whether it's in a good time or a bad time? How desperate can we be, are we? Is it wrong to talk to God and express that desperation? I doubt that we do it a lot. I tend to think that probably when we get in those desperate times, we convert over and try to start talk King James to God. But there's nothing wrong with pouring out our heart and our soul and crying before our Lord God. Thank you. Next week we'll look at something, we'll continue with another song.